Hey, buying Bitcoin on a KYC or non-KYC exchange, wherever you buy it, but then, you know, securing it, hodling it in a secure, the most secure manner so you don't lose anything, any keys, any passphrases, any, you know, maps or configurations. So, you know, the more complex it becomes, the more you need to be, you know, knowledgeable, and you need to understand what you're doing, especially when it comes to multi-signature wallets. So I'm really happy to have Thibaut Maréchal, or in short, Thib, back on my show again. He's from Knox Custody, and he has developed together, not sure whether by himself or with his team, the Dux Reserve. It's Dux Reserve enables you to create watch-only wallets and multi-sig vaults, and you have full control of your hardware devices, and it's free and open source, most of all. And so you can already subscribe, you know, to test the beta version as soon as it's released. So we're going to talk about, you know, security, about noobs, the average user, what the average user needs to be careful about, and a lot of other, you know, aspects related to hodling Bitcoin, securing Bitcoin, whether it was a single wallet or multi-sig wallet. And yeah, without further ado, this is my talk with Thibaut Maréchal. Let me know if you have any questions. Please subscribe and follow me on Twitter, Kayvon Devani, and subscribe to my YouTube channel and podcast platform. Thank you so much, and hope you can enjoy this one. All right, welcome to the show, to the Kayvon Devani Connection Show. Thib, thanks so much for your time and coming back on my show. It's been a long time since we haven't talked to one another, so. And we haven't actually seen one another since last, I don't know, conference in, when was it, in Riga? How are you, man?
Berlin, yeah, the LN conference. I think it was 2019. Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
October 2019.
It's been a while. Are you going to Miami? Because I wish I could, but I can't. I mean, we have a baby and it's difficult, you know, with all the madness of lockdown, we don't know what's coming, you know.
Yeah, I want to go to Miami. The thing is, it requires a 2 weeks hop in Mexico or Costa Rica or whatever, because from Europe, inbound flights to the US are still forbidden. So yes, the plan is to go there, but it is involved logistically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
But I really want to go. It seems like it's going to be a wild conference. I can't wait.
All right. Well, listen, there's so many topics, questions, and exciting stuff that we want to talk about. First of all, you've been crushing it with your articles some time ago, you know, so it's went pretty viral. You're a pretty good writer, I've noticed. I mean, maybe it takes some time till it matures, I guess, but how is it going with your writing?
Yeah, it takes months sometimes to like take that article that, you know, I've had in draft mode for months and just decide to like write it. And it takes then, you know, an hour to write it all and then finally publish it. So it's a pretty weird process for me. It's been a while though, I haven't written. It really takes, it's always a great exercise, but it takes a lot of discipline.
Yeah.
And time also. And sometimes I just don't, can't yeah. find any of those.
Yeah, and a really good quality, high quality, you know, article, a book or whatever. I know that for myself, it takes time. You need to, you know, have it rest, mature, and then think about it, you know, and then work on it again. So listen, I mean, you work in Knox Custody. People know you already, you know, but maybe a brief introduction. What's been going on with Knox Custody and now this beautiful new project that you've developed, Dux Reserve, if I'm pronouncing correctly?
Yeah, Dux Reserve. So Knox Custody. I'm still working at Knox Custody. It is. It's been growing, of course, recently, as I am sure a lot of other Bitcoin companies, experienced the same pattern. We're serving a growing number of clients. We've had a growing number and amount of BTC held in custody, and also a rising amount of insurance capacity that we've been exercising to protect our customers against theft or loss. So it's been quite a nice ride recently. It's definitely the bull market territory is attracting new participants. There are many more discussions now around, of course, the sort of corporate balance sheets and, you know, adding Bitcoin to those. It's been, of course, now in hindsight, it looks obvious, but, you know, it's funny because like a year and a half ago, it wasn't obvious to a lot of people, not us at least. So, so yeah, it's been a good ride so far.
Super bullish. Is that the same with the, you know, putting Bitcoin on your, you know, as a treasury on the balance sheets in France too, because you look at it in France, right? Is that what's the update? Is there an update?
In France, I have had one conversation with a French company who is looking to do this, to add Bitcoin to their corporate balance sheet. They have to, of course, get, you know, board approval, and it is still seen as a speculative move. It seems from the last conversation I've had with them. So from that angle, yeah, there was no real activity there, I mean, that I've seen. But, you know, of course there is massive activity, like as we've seen with the announcement from Acker and Citi, right? Their new division fully dedicated to Bitcoin. So, however, in Canada and the US, there's definitely more appetite that we've seen related to Knox directly. There's still a lot of open questions around the playbook, how to actually operationalize a sort of a Bitcoin standard for corporate balance sheet. Like, it, you know, for administrators who are not in the space, it is still, there's still a bunch of open questions in terms of how to actually, you know, do this in a responsible manner. And so we've had some pretty interesting conversations, and it, I'm sure, you know, we're only a little blip in all the conversations that are happening in that realm.
Yeah, I would see. I'm really excited to and thrilled to see how this is evolving. So, yeah, let me also screen share a little bit for the YouTube viewers. Like, can you go a little bit into this Ducks Reserve? What was the primary objective? Or it seems to me, like from your Twitter comments, also it was sort of a personal ambition or desire to develop this or to work on this. What's the purpose of this Ducks Reserve? A key manager.
Sure. Yeah. So, Ducks, really, so this product, was, sort of has been in the works for a few years, and a few attempts to sort of build an experience around essentially personal or consumer key management. And it really came from, just a personal experience of myself and friends and family struggling to upgrade their security, and essentially get a good user experience when it comes to actual personal custody of your funds. You know, of course, there are many different options out there, whether you look at, Casa, Unchained Capital, and then the standard hardware wallet providers, right? Trezor, Ledger, even Coolcard for more sophisticated users. But what I came to realize by personally experiencing it and speaking with other friends in particular Bitcoiners on Twitter is that as you sort of hold your own key on your hardware wallet and you sort of DCA for a few months or a few years and your stash starts to grow, at some point there is a level of value that accrues on that Bitcoin holding. And you realize that at some point you sort of, you know, go over a certain threshold of comfort, and you realize that, yeah, you're actually holding a lot of Bitcoin on that single hoarder device, and that you know that there is a better way with multisig, for instance. But the thing is, even if you know that security model can be better, there is always, of course, the risk that you sort of miss a step and that you don't do things the right way.
Exactly, especially multisig. Yeah,
good Bitcoiners. Exactly, and so good Bitcoiners, they sort of know that the biggest threat is themselves and not necessarily an external attacker. And so, personally, I've had this experience of, you know, I know that my current setup is not optimal. I know what's best. I know what is required for me to do it, but, you know, I haven't taken the leap yet. why is that? And, you know, and also, am I the only one? And so by basically asking myself this question, I just spoke to a bunch of people and realized that, yeah, a lot of other people are stuck in that same level of discomfort. And so that's why we decided to build Dux to help us basically fix that problem for ourselves and then offer it to others in a sort of, you know, free and open source way, which respects the Bitcoin ethos of you know, development in that space.
Mm-hmm. The description is, you know, on better.darksreserve.com. So anybody can like subscribe to the early access. It says create watch only wallets. Now, if we just stick to the watch only wallet, the watch only wallet, I know, for example, from, you know, Summarize Sentinel, where, you know, you import all your XPUBs, EPUBs, whatever is YPUBs, and then you can sort of have a total overview of every of all your funds listed as a watch only. That's like, do you want to comment on this? Is there something specific to that? Like,
yes. So essentially, with that desktop app, you're able to import hardware wallets and essentially detach the notion of this, the hardware device, which has the ability to sign on the wallet, and the wallet itself, which allows you to, you know, view the balances, create transactions, broadcast those transactions. However, the signing really happens with that specific hardware device that you've essentially linked to the interface, to the application. And so the Dux desktop app really is that abstraction layer. So it allows a user to connect a hardware device and then essentially let the user keep that hardware device in the secure place. And whenever they want to access their wallet, they can do so on the Dux desktop app without having to retrieve their hardware device. They can create transactions on that interface. They can broadcast those transactions from that interface, but all the signing will happen in tandem with the hardware device. So in that case, our desktop app does not hold any private key. It only manages public keys together to create those wallets and vaults. And so, you know, the same logic applies between a simple wallet, which is only one key, and a multi-sig vault, which is multiple keys. Right. So on one end, it's going to be a single signature. And on the other end, it's going to be a multiple signature model. And what Dux is doing is it's trying to help the user make a transition, if they want to, from a single key model to a multiple key model without too many changes in the user experience. And so I think the critical element here is to help the user understand that this hardware device is nothing more than a transaction signer. It is nothing more than, you know, the pen you're going to use on a check to sign a transaction, and that's it. You don't need that hardware device to look at your balance and or to deposit funds, right? And so, you know, our belief behind this product, our assumption is that it improves substantially the user experience because you don't have to pull out this highly sensitive hardware device anytime you want to do deposits or view your balances on the wallet or vault. And because that experience is consistent for both a wallet and a vault, you're going to be much more inclined at some point, if you believe it is the right thing for you, to move to a vault, which requires, of course, multiple hardware devices to sign transactions and therefore spend Bitcoin from.
Oh, great. Yeah. I mean, I like the approach. I love your approach and your team, you know, user experience, user interface. So let me see. There was a question that popped in my mind is that, yeah, you know, as like Sentinel, is will there be like a, like if we just stick now to the watch only wallet, will there be a mobile version of it for your mobile? Just, you know, to have a sort of a overview of all your funds.
Yeah, mobile. We've been talking about this amongst us. It is something we'd like to be doing. It's not in the pipeline in the short term because there are, you know, many different features that we could add on the desktop app to make it of course, you know, very resilient and robust, but featureful enough so that people find it interesting to use and valuable. But definitely, mobile is going to be at some point an interesting platform for us to build on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we've been thinking of ways where you can, you know, scan some QR code that is displayed on the desktop app to instantly link all your wallets and vaults that exist on your desktop onto the mobile as watch-only wallets.
Oh,
and
wow.
Vaults.
Okay. That's great.
So that definitely is interesting. These are ideas that we have, but they're not implemented and they're far from being pushed to production.
Mm-hmm. Now, which wallets are already integrated? Like the main ones, like Bitbox, Akoba Vault, Trezor, and Cold Card, right? Are those already
so
compatible?
For now, we do. We have Ledger, Trezor, and Cold Card. And for Cold Card, we have both the USB access and the air gap mode with the micro SD card. And so for now, this is the coverage we have for hardware devices. And sure, yeah, we plan on adding other ones, whether it's Kobo, Bitbox, and a slew of others. Spectre DIY could be really interesting as well. So it's going to be a matter of I would say, you know, user demand. What is the appetite for these different hardware devices, and how and then how much work does it take us to implement them?
Mm-hmm. And you're planning to integrate more wallets, you know, to be compatible.
Well, I mean, looking at other wallets, you know, there is Passport from Foundation Devices, which is interesting because it, again, all these hardware devices use standard PSBT, which is interesting for multisig, of course. And also the QR code based offline or air gap signing, which is really interesting. We're going to be working on that type of multi-sig user experience where the user never connects their hardware device to the laptop. Yeah, you know, so essentially just signing via QR codes or micro SD cards. And it is something that we want to, basically we really want to work on the main UX around the desktop app and then integrate different hardware devices, which help us meet the goal of the user experience. Our goal is not to have, you know, 100% of hardware devices included, even though it, you know, it could be basically this. The result could be that we end up trying to have 100% of those hardware devices added, but it's more so on the how does a hardware device meet the user experience objective of the app. And if it does, then, you know, will how much priority do we put on integrating this device? And some devices, because they're built on the same standards or even the same code bases, like they're not going to add substantial amount of work. And also, you know, Bitcoin Core HWI, which is that library of hardware wallet integration, makes it really simple for us to work around with.
Yeah, let's connect this, tie this a little bit to the full node, because, you know, I had recently some issues, and I think any other average user or noob would, I think, should know or be educated on it. I mean, as long as I think one doesn't, you know, screw around with Lightning or Lightning channels and all that, you know, all those gadgets that are, you know, to a certain degree, not really matured. And there's, you know, always a risk to lose those funds. And I'm not really really fond of, or I don't have much knowledge about the Lightning channels, to be honest with you. So I use, for example, MyNode, FullNode, just for, you know, Spectre and Samurai and Dojo. Yeah. And somebody, I think, commented on when you published, you know, that tweet. He said, why do I need, I mean, you already answered that, but I think it was something like, why do I need Dark's Reserve or the key manager if I have Spectre and Sparrow and something like that? So yeah. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Spectre is perhaps, in my personal view, the best the best sort of wallet around Bitcoin Core and multi-sig coordinator that is out there. It is super featureful. It has, you know, everything that's needed for someone who really truly cares about sovereignty and even privacy to have, you know, a good best practices around security. The focus of Spectre is, I think, in serving power users, technical users, tech savvy users who really want to get those sophisticated features. For us, you know, we're trying to make multisig a bit more accessible to the common man. And so the software is opinionated, meaning that this product that we've built is going to be guiding the user into one particular way of doing things, which may not please everybody. And so because of that opinionated perspective that we've included in the development of that product, it has less features. It is going to be less sophisticated on the technology side of things, I would say, on the options that you're going to have on that interface. But we believe that it sort of meets the needs of other, perhaps less technically savvy users, or users who are perhaps afraid to construct bespoke multisig vaults without, shooting themselves in the foot. And so we're basically allowing those users to follow a pretty well guided path. And by following that path, the goal, of course, is that they can't make mistakes that they would be making if they had the choice on the interface. And if you look at other alternatives, you mentioned Sparrow Wallet. Like we've looked at all these interfaces before, right? And then their code bases as well. And it is Sparrow Wallet as well. It's a great product, but it is designed for power users. Oops, sorry, it's a windy day today. Sparrow Wallet is the same in my opinion. Then you look at Nunchuk, is another great multi-sig coordinator, but it is pretty technical as well. Lily Wallet has done a fantastic job of bringing that user experience and I think to a more general audience that is less technically savvy. And so I would say we're more comparable to an interface like that. And again, we have our different ways of doing it. For instance, like one particular thing that we decided to do is to not allow users to add keys unless those keys that they add are it's part of a vault or a wallet creation. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Whereas on the other products that I've mentioned, you're going to be able to add the key. So meaning connect your hardware device. And once it's connected and you have other devices that have been connected, you're going to be able to take those devices and put them into vaults and create vaults or create, single key wallets. But I think this experience, while it's great because it allows optionality, it allows the user to be completely free to make any decision they want. It's also, it requires a stronger knowledge in terms of actual key management. And so the route we've taken is the opposite. It's like, well, the intent of the user is to create a wallet or is to design a vault. And so we're going to ask them to tell us the intent. Okay, I want to create a wallet or I want to create a vault. And that vault is a 2 of 3 vault, 2 of 3 multisig vault. And following that will demand that they connect their hardware devices so that we can extract the keys and then, connect all the devices together and construct those vaults. And so from a UX standpoint, I think it feels more intuitive. It feels like there's no difference between creating a wallet and creating a vault. It's just that instead of connecting one hardware device for a wallet, you're going to be connecting 3 hardware devices for a vault.
I see. So let's clarify a little bit, you know, for the average user that, so because I'm familiar only with Spectre. So if someone has, you know, a single and or multi-sig on Spectre, they can, you know, download the JSON file or the PDF or whatever. Can they like upload that to Docs Reserve, to the key manager, and create sort of a duplicate of the single multi-sig wallet? I mean, just asking, you know, to clarify what is possible and not.
No. It's a great question. So for the configuration file, which is the file that tells the software how the keys fit together in a multi-sig vault, or how the, you know, addresses are going to be derived from a single key, which is going to be for, in the case of a watch-only wallet. There are standards. There are no strict standards for now in terms of how to structure the configuration file, but we've looked at the different, like, the ways the wallets do it, whether it's Blue Wallet, whether it's Spectre, whether it's Sparrow, and we sort of crafted our configuration file to be interoperable as much as possible. Of course, I believe right now there are differences in the specifications. So it isn't something we've tested yet, but the goal would definitely be that a user creating a vault with Dux could be able to, you know, move away from Dux and import the same vault that they've created with the configuration file on a Lily or on a Blue Wallet. And here, the fundamental, like, design principle is to make sure there's no vendor lock-in, right? Make sure that the user isn't stuck with us if they don't like the product anymore and they want to move away.
Yeah. You know, a question I've been raising also, because I'm going to have Ben Kaufman back on my show to continue our sort of educational episodes on single sig, multi-sig on Spectre. And I gave him a couple of ideas, you know, that would be great, like, to time lock. I mean, it doesn't really have to do with Docs Reserve, but like to time lock funds, like for a specific time, and just lock it, you know, especially for your posterity, for your children. And what if, you know, something happens to me, get a heart attack, or, you know, a truck runs over me. And I think this feeling of being comfortable and, you know, feeling relaxed that, you know, your kids or your family or whoever, you know, is your higher, to be able to, you know, to access those funds. And, you know, there's just so many technical things that always arises afterwards. You know, as I said, you know, in the beginning, I had some issues, you know, with my drive on my node. Now it's repaired itself. But, you know, if you have a single multi-sig wallet and you have, for example, on Spectre, it's connected to your node, and all those questions, like, do you need to back it up? How do you back it up? Do you need to back up at all? Like, all these questions. And of course, you know, key management is wonderful, you know, to, especially to have like a total overview of, you know, of your funds, whether it be, you know, a single wallet or multi-sig wallet. What's your take on that? Like, on security, on, you know, taking care of your funds, like, what's going to happen? Like, what if something happens to me? You know, how is my family going to access those funds? Are they going to be comfortable, or do they need to, you know, to figure out things? And
yeah, this is a multi-billion-dollar question, right? This sort of a inheritance planning, estate planning for Bitcoin. I think multi-sig, you know, definitely adds flexibility in there, and you can construct, you can have ways where you're going to be having, you know, say an external agent like a lawyer or a notary or someone you trust to actually hold some keys as part of your multi-sig vault. And if you pass away and your personal keys get to be inaccessible, you would be able to rely on the service of that person to recover your funds. I mean, this is only just one type of scenario that could be put forward with multi-sig, and you have companies like Casa doing it, good services for for collaborative custody. I'm not sure they have an explicit inheritance planning type of product, but I could be wrong. Don't quote me on this. More hardware devices to secure and more seeds. So if you have a two of three, well, you're going to have to secure those three hardware devices and also secure their three distinct seed backups. So that already makes six different pieces of you know, of physical things that you really need to secure. And then there's a seventh core piece of information, which is the configuration file, which essentially tells the software exactly how those devices fit together to be able to access your funds. And so while that piece of information, the configuration file, cannot cause a loss, if someone were to find it, it is a pretty big privacy leak, meaning that it just tells anybody with access to that configuration file, it gives them access to the amount that are held in that vault, as well as the entire transaction history. So from a security standpoint, there are quite a lot of questions that a user should ask themselves in terms of how to best secure those hardware devices and those seed backups. Of course, you don't want to have them all at the same place, because then it defeats the purpose of multisig. Ideally, the user is able to geographically distribute those pieces of information across, you know, their office space, their house, their, you know, bank vaults, or any other type of trusted places where they could actually store those pieces of information securely. Again, when a user is going to create a vault with whether it's with Spectre or with Dux or Lily, it is assumed that the hardware devices are initialized, right? So from a security standpoint, there are other concerns, right, in that procedure, when the user actually initializes the hardware device and back up the seed, right? Because you want to make sure the seed is properly backed up. You want to make sure the backups are tested and functional and you know, well stored before actually constructing a vault and thinking about using that key in the context of a wallet or a vault. And so I think all these security concerns are so far, they've been abstracted away from products like Dux. And this is something we'd like to be able to do is really holding the hand of the user, not only in the creation of a wallet with us or a vault, but more so before, when you initialize your devices and when you back them up and when you then, you know, securely store those backups.
Yeah, you made a good point in the beginning. Yeah, you mentioned the beginning, you know, that your worst enemy are, well, not enemy, but like worst, like point of failure usually. And I would advise, I mean, anyone, you know, who is not familiar with multisig or how to do this exactly, you know, how to keep all those things secure, whatever it is, that map of the multisig, you know, all the seeds and the configuration, you know, I would advise, you know, just stick to a single wallet until that time being.
100%. There's a learning curve, and you know, it's not because we're building this multisig product that we're gonna sing the multisig gospel. I think users have to go through their own journey, and you know, multisig is far from being the solution to everybody. I think most users are, you know, better off and just manage that securely, understand, get comfortable with that type of setup, understand how to properly, you know, recover this hardware wallet if it gets lost, using backups or operational procedure, then you can finally decide to, you know, slowly upgrade to a multisig vault and test it out in parallel and get comfortable with that new setup, test out the recovery procedures, test out the different ways to sign using your different hardware devices. And once you're comfortable, you know, slowly move funds to that new vault. But it takes time. You absolutely don't want to rush things out and do mistakes. because that's how most people get wrecked, is by, you know, locking themselves out of their own Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's so super important what you just said, you know, because it's an educational process. And I, you know, and I think any average user or noob should just stick to that, what he or she understands. You know, would it be mobile wallet, a single wallet, or, you know, just a simple hardware wallet? And you know, until it matures, because, you know, if you feel, you know, it's just like, if you, you know, if people get wrecked, you know, and it's really, I mean, yeah, it's a tragic thing then, you know, because what do you do then, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You have no recourse, you know?
Yeah. And so this is really the, you know, one of the main goals behind this product also is helping users learn how, you know, hardware wallets are, what are the trade-offs in different models. You know, when a user should perhaps think of doing a 2 of 3 multisig versus a 3 of 5, and why a 3 of 3 multisig is a very dangerous type of quorum. So this is where, again, we're going to be opinionated in our views and perhaps provide some recommendations to users. Of course, you know, telling them that ultimately the choice and sort of responsibility lies in their own hands. Like, we want to, you know, when we say we celebrate individual sovereignty, is that this is what we mean, right? It's, we're providing software to manage your keys, but ultimately you are the one in charge. You are the one in full control of your hardware devices, and you are the one making the decision whether you want to use one particular setup versus the other one. We can tell you why we think one could be better than the other for you, but ultimately it's your call.
Yeah. And you know, it's people like you or Ben Kaufman or the, you know, the team of Spectre, you know, or Dark Reserve that really look to what is really needed, you know, like in terms of user experience, user interface, like how can I make the process easier? And I know that Ben Kaufman, for example, is integrating or is about to integrate, you know, the whole Tor or the Bitcoin Core. So it's like a push on a button. So people don't need to do this thing separately. And everything is like, you know, integrated into one package. And I think this is a much smoother, you know, process for people, especially for noobs. So Tib, thank you so much. Let's just wrap this up. Do you have any other, like, is there anything on the roadmap or where people can follow you?
Yeah, definitely. Look, we're about to ship this beta. We announced it yesterday. Got a lot of really positive feedback. It was awesome. See that from Bitcoiners on Twitter. So yeah, if people are interested to test it out, it's going to be a beta release. So, you know, only to be used with small amounts of Bitcoin if you're using it on mainnet, but you can also use it on testnet. So yeah, if you have you know, a Ledger, a Trezor, or a Coil card, and you want to experience with watch-only wallets or multisig vaults, sign up on the DuxReserve.com site, or join our Telegram if you don't want to share your email with us, and we'll share the beta release pretty soon.
Awesome, Tib. So looking forward, yeah, to our next talk. Thank you so much. Have fun. Hope we can, you know, meet each other in the very near future.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you, Kevin.
Bye, Tib.
Have a good one.
Okay. That was an awesome talk. Very informative and educational with Thibaut Marichal, who works with Knox Custody and now Dux Reserve. Yeah, make sure it's always, you know, security, all those steps that might be, you know, taken granted for more advanced users or techies, you know, or really experienced users. I would just stick to that, what you understand when it comes to security, to privacy, securing your, especially your private keys, your seed, and, you know, ask around, go into Telegram groups, you know, whatever you're using, whether it's Spectre or MyNode or FullNode or whatever it is, but just ask around and, you know, do you need to back up anything? And yeah, so I find it really amazing what, you know, what kind of things are being developed, what kind of products and services, especially with the emphasis on user experience and user interface. So let me know your questions and comments. Please follow me on YouTube and on my podcast platforms and on Twitter at Kevin Davani. Make sure you follow Thibaut Marichal or Tib and on Twitter, and sign up for the beta release of Dux Reserve on the Key Manager. Thanks so much again and stay safe. I'll see you on the next episode, the Kevin Davani Connection.